Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.
And this is Boston Radio.
It's 45 degrees in Boston. This is Dick Summer with you with the Nightlight Show on WBZ.
And a frantic, friendly Friday night in Boston town. It's Arnie Ginsberg. Woo-woo for you on the net.
Nobody plays more hits than the new old hits, C94, WZOU, FM Boston.
WRKO presents...
This is WBCN, Boston.
Oh, yeah, remember that? The history of Boston's airwaves includes one of the nation's first radio stations,
WGI,
the first commercial radio license,
WBZ,
and a host of legendary personalities from the comedy duo Bob and Ray to sportscasters like Eddie Andelman and Ned Martin to DJs like Charles Lacuadera and political talkers like David Brudnoy.
In more recent years, radio stations across America have consolidated and homogenized. On today's radio dial, Boston just doesn't sound that much like Boston anymore, with a few notable exceptions.
That's right. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know what I mean. That trajectory is charted by media historian Donna Halper, author of the new book Boston Radio, 1920 to 2010. Donna Halper is an assistant professor of communications at Lesley University, and she joins us right now. And welcome, Donna Halper. So great to have you.
Oh, this is a privilege for me. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, that's terrific. So we're going to spend some time playing some examples of old Boston radio station, taking some radio stations and taking some listener calls and just talking about this great history. And first off, tell us about your background and your connection to the passion for radio in this city.
Well, I go back to the 1950s. When I was growing up, I used to listen to radio and think about, boy, wouldn't it be great to be in that industry, except all the DJs were guys. And the reason they always gave for only guys was supposedly because guys had a big, deep voice, because back then you had to talk like this.
Sort of like me, I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then I heard Arnie Ginsberg. And Arnie didn't talk like that at all. And Arnie was funny. He was entertaining. He made fun of himself. He called himself old aching adenoids, old leather lungs. And I said to myself, wow, if he can do it, I can do it. And I embarked upon it turned out to be a long effort to finally become the first woman in the history of Northeastern University to ever be on the radio, and then the first woman just about every place I ever worked. And after that, a radio consultant, and, you know, discovered a little rock and roll band called Rush, and et cetera, and et cetera. But over the years, I always wanted to say thank you to the industry that nurtured me, to the industry I loved. And that's what this book is about.
Well, it's a terrific collection of personalities and history and sort of reminiscences, really, about Boston radio. What did you listen to in Boston when you were growing up?
A little bit of everything. I was very fortunate. My mother and father, God rest their souls, turned me on to big band music. They also listened to the old WHDH with people like Fred B. Cole and Bob Clayton. So I heard Benny Goodman. You know, I heard a lot of different big band songs. But then as I was growing up, rock and roll was happening. I loved Elvis. I loved the Beatles. I remember where I was when the Beatles were on the Ed Sullivan Show, etc. And I grew up with a very eclectic background, which I still have today. I loved folk music. Jefferson Kay of WBZ used to do a show called The Hootenanny on Sunday night, and he used to play some of the great local folk artists. This is the key, live and local. So he'd play Tom Rush. Joan Baez used to perform here. So, I mean, you know, you could hear all these up-and-coming folk stars. So, like I said, I was very fortunate. I got exposed to all different kinds of music, and that's something I'm still doing today.
So, listeners, who is your favorite Boston radio personality from days gone by? How have the airwaves changed over the years? That's what we want to get a sense of from you. Was Boston radio stronger in decades past, or is it stronger than ever right now? What do you think? Give us a call. Join the conversation with Donna Halper, whose new book, Boston Radio 1920 to 2010, is right here in the studio with us. Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And Donna, we've got some terrific sort of archival tape we want to play. Here's a recording According to your research, this is Boston's first female radio personality. Her name is Eunice Randall, and this is a 1937 reenactment that she's doing of a broadcast she originally gave in 1920. She's reading the Beatrix Potter story, Peter Rabbit. Let's listen.
Brighton Street as something red flashed out behind him, and two black paws pinned him down, and sharp teeth caught him by the back of the neck. Old Granny Fox had caught Peter Rabbit at last. And that's the end of tonight's bedtime story. Good night, boys and girls. Now for some news items. Here's one from Boston. Superbly gowned, with a beautiful diamond necklace, and carrying a handsome...
Terrific. I know that's a reenactment, but it does the trick, doesn't it? Tell us about Eunice Randall.
I was very fortunate to get that from her niece, who is still alive and wanted me to tell Eunice's story. Eunice is one of the forgotten women of broadcasting history. She went on the air, by some accounts, in 1919, definitely 1920. First woman announcer in New England, one of the first in the United States. She was also an engineer. She also told stories to the children. She read the traffic reports. Yes, they did have traffic reports back then. And the stolen car reports. And I love the newscast. You know, can you imagine, like, you know, the governor today, like, you know, in a beautiful business suit.
That's right.
But that was the style back then. And in fact, WGI, her station, did the first newscast along with the Boston American newspaper way back in 1922. So finding out about her, going to her childhood home, learning that there were women announcers way back in those days, just made me even more determined to find out who else had been forgotten about.
Mm. Well, I want to rocket forward by around, I guess, 20, 25 years. Bob Elliott, Ray Goulding, they got their start on WHDH AM in Boston with a show called Matinee with Bob and Ray. It started as something to fill the air when Red Sox games were rained out. Bob and Ray would simply improv with a live band. And here's the start of a broadcast from September 1948. Let's listen.
Hey, there you are. Excuse me, what program is this? You know what I mean?
I think we're on the wrong station.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Let's switch the dial. A little bit here.
Yeah, that's better. The Gay 90 type show.
Program. That's the closest he could get to Gay 90s on short notice.
Matinee with Bob and Ray is back on the air.
Those are the good old days.
They just have this terrific sound, like anything they say you want to listen to.
Yeah, they got started in 1946, and again, totally accidentally, you know, a newsman and a DJ who just basically were filling time, and it turned out their repartee was so amusing that the general manager said, hey, how'd you like to do a show? And they went back to the era where you could still improvise, where it wasn't all prepackaged, it wasn't all you read the liner cards, where somebody could be creative and get away with it. And they were two of the most creative announcers. They, of course, went on to a career at NBC, but we still think of them as ours from Boston.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned the rich history, one of the first commercial radio stations, the first commercial radio license, WBZ, a bunch of iconic names like Bob and Ray, Kurt Gowdy, Ned Martin, DJs like Charles Laquadera, who we'll talk about. What do you think made Boston such a rich place for radio? Or was it rich all over the country?
Actually, in those days, radio in general was part of the community. People got excited when a radio station came to town. They'd do front page news articles about it. You know, radio station such and such went on the air. It was a really big deal. And as a result, I think you would find some great talent in a lot of other cities. But what you find in Boston that I think is kind of unique is that the personalities here stayed a long time. Okay. Mm. You have people like Jess Kane, who were here for, you know, ages. Brudnoy, ages. Maddie Siegel, Maddie in the Morning at Kiss 108. Now, we think top 40, oh, yeah, they come and go. Maddie spent, like, his 25th anniversary? I mean, this is the kind of market where, living here, you get to know the personalities as if they're your friends. This is something radio does better than any other mass medium. You feel like you are listening to your friends.
Mm. Well, let's take a call. The number is 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Talk. We're talking to Donna Halper about the old days of radio in Boston. Who's your favorite Boston radio personality from days gone by? And who do you recall? What do you remember? What do you miss? Let's go to Barbara, who's calling from Salem. Hi, Barbara.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I can't wait to get this book. I wanted to say hi to Donna, and I remember what it was like being the first and only woman. I worked in broadcasting about 20 years, and I was usually the only woman wherever I went.
Ah, yes.
And had all kinds of interesting experiences, like the time a general manager backed me into the newsroom and wanted to know if I wanted a little extra something in my paycheck.
Oh, boy.
Don't get me started.
Wait, nudge, nudge. Oh, yeah, I'm sure you ran into that a lot. I mean, that was pretty common, I guess, back in those days. You had to do what the boys were doing and not pay attention when they, you know, kind of did their boy thing.
Well, Barbara, thanks for bringing that up. I want to actually talk to Donna about that. Donna, you mentioned that you were the first female announcer on Northeastern University Radio. And as I look through this book, there are very, very few female faces in the book. You know, what barriers? I mean, I think Barbara just expressed it pretty well. Were those kinds of challenges typical?
Unfortunately, yes. I was an executive at a number of stations, and yet I was always asked to get coffee for the other guys. Not that I mind getting coffee, but you know what I'm saying. Unfortunately, there was an attitude back then that you needed a certain kind of voice to be on the radio and that people wouldn't listen to a woman on the air. In fact, there was supposedly research that said that if a woman does the news, she just sounds like she's gossiping. Mm. So inherently, there was this bias in the culture. To some degree, we've changed. One of the great things about being alive is the fact that you do get to see social change. And I've lived to see the fact that today there's newswomen and somehow the Republic didn't fall. Mm. You know, there's women anchoring shows. They're anchoring with men just like you guys are doing. You sound wonderful. And I don't mean that snidely. I'm saying there was a time when the idea that a man and a woman could anchor together, Harry Reasoner on television quit just about rather than have to. Remember Barbara Walters?
That's right.
And he was like, I won't do it. I'm like, Harry. But this was unfortunately a very typical ad. I remember when I did my first show, after 4 years of fighting to be on the college radio station, I remember the guys standing outside the door of my studio waiting for me to make a mistake so that they could say, see, we tried to put a woman on the air and see what happened. But I didn't make a mistake.
Well, like you said, one of the nice things about being alive is watching things change for the better in many respects. Let's go to Patrick, who's calling from Lynn. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. I believe you were asking earlier how you feel that radio in Boston has changed. I mean,
sure.
I feel it's somewhat stagnated a bit because we lost WBCN. That was one of the most famous stations in the country.
And absolutely.
One of the most, you know, record-breaking, but, you know, CBS took it over and it went under. Now it doesn't exist anymore other than as a substation on HD radio. And I mean, but I mean, at the same time, you do have those famous personalities, like you said, Maddie. Then you have like Warren and Wally over on WRR. They've been around for like 20, 30 years now.
Sure, Patrick. Almost. So, you know, we've got a clip here from Charles Lacquadera at WBCN. Let's listen a little bit and then we'll pick up your question with Donna.
WBCN. I'm Charles Lacquadera in the middle of 10 in a row. Coming up, we're going to play Michigas, where you could win lots of great prizes.
There's only one reason for a rock musician to wake up early in the morning. It's because he's nuts. That's why I listen to Charles Lacquadera on the way to my therapist.
Sports and weather, news and concert reports, and a whole lot more on 104. I'm Charles Lacquadera, and you're on the Big Mattress. Early morning, 6 to 10 on WBCN. More music, more fun.
So that was Charles Lacquadera, and that also featured a very young Steven Tyler of Aerosmith.
Absolutely.
And you write in your book that, you know, this is the era when BCN changed to progressive rock. It was the golden age of that format. Yep. Announcers like Lacquadera were allowed the freedom to select their own music and express political views.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. In fact, he stood up to sponsors when he felt that Shell, there were several companies that he took on because he felt their business practices, or he was opposed to apartheid, or he felt they were greedy, or whatever the particular cause was at that time. And he had the freedom. Okay, he got in a little bit of trouble, but he always came back. And I can't imagine announcers today taking a stand against a sponsor on the air the way Charles did. And another thing that the listener mentioned with regard to WBCN, The announcers did, in fact, pick their own music. Progressive rock got started underground rock. The announcers were like their own DJs, and they would choose a song based on they felt it had the potential. When I discovered Rush back in 1973,
this 74, is the Canadian rock band.
The Canadian
band.
Rock right. band, not the talk shows.
Right,
no.
Right. Or the folk singer. Right.
That too. I love Tom Rush. What a great guy. But when I discovered that rock band in 74, okay, I couldn't do that today. Because today it's all corporate, it's all here's the playlist, and, you know, we have to research it. And we were the research. We thought we knew what was right for our audience. We talked to a lot of people. We took chances on music. And I think it all worked out excellently well. And BCN was living proof of that. They broke so many new artists in this town.
So our last caller had sort of asked the question, you know, so, the suggestion there that we've lost something, that something has sort of stagnated out there. Do you think that's the case?
I absolutely agree. Now, here's the problem, okay? I think to some degree radio killed the goose that laid the golden egg. I think that a lot of corporations decided that, hey, radio's profitable, so we can just voice track, we can syndicate, we can put X announcer on 660 stations, and that'll be fine. Except people love live and local radio. It's going to sound very self-serving for me to say this, but the reason your shows work is because you are in this community, people know you, people can talk to you, whatever the format. People loved David Brudnoy because they felt like he was plugged into the market. Maddie, Jess Kane, these people know the city, they know the people, and people feel like, wow, these are my friends. Radio has got to get back to that if they want to survive.
Mm. Let's take a call from Jay. Jay is calling. Hi, Jay, you're on the air.
Hi, Donna. I predate you. I went to BU. I'm calling from Florida.
How are you listening to us down there, Jay?
I listen to you on my computer in background at work.
Oh,
all
fantastic.
Right. Well, thank you.
We're happy to hear that.
WBUR. Yeah, I went to Boston University, but way back in the late 60s, there was a radio station. I think it was WIOD. Does that ring a bell?
Wonderful Isle of Dreams. Yes, WIOD. Oh, absolutely.
God.
Yes.
Okay, their first birthday, I think it was in 1967 or 66. I entered the contest and won $100 for their first birthday. They became extremely successful. On their second birthday, they had either $1,000 or $2,000 first prize. I built a 6-foot-tall, huge can of activated happy birthday spray with an engine inside and a basket of confetti. It wouldn't fit on the subway, so I wheeled it through the city of Boston. They were announcing it. People were coming up to me on the corners. I got down there, and they disqualified me because I won the year before.
but you're raising something that's very important. Hmm. Radio used to be about the fun, okay? It wasn't just DJs telling jokes. It was about getting people in the community involved, you know, having contests, not just like 10th caller wins money, but, you know, build us the biggest birthday card or, you know, bake us the biggest birthday cake. And people had fun doing it. Radio was and could be, again, fun to listen to.
Mm. Jay, thanks so much for the call. I wanted to play another sort of iconic voice and moment, and this comes from the rich world of sports radio in Boston. So let's just play this tape. Rad, three folks in the control room. There we go. All right.
The 1-0 delivery to Fisk. He swings. Long drive. Left field. If it stays fair, it's gone. Home run. The Red Sox win. And the series is tied 3 games apiece.
Okay, I was a young man in those days. That still brings goosebumps. That's, of course, Ned Martin calling Carlton Fisk.
Yeah, mercy.
Mercy. Carlton Fisk's game-winning home run, Game 6 of the 1975 World Series against the Cincinnati Reds. Terrific legacy of sports announcers. Ned Martin, Kurt Gowdy, of course, goes on to NBC. What was so rich about this world here?
First shout out to Gus Rooney and Frank Ryan, who were the first two to do sports radio here in Boston. Frank Ryan back in 1924 did the Bruins games on WBZ, and Gus Rooney, God rest his soul, he did the Red Sox games in 1926. So, yeah, ever since almost day one, people have loved listening to sports. In fact, I know people that will watch it on TV, but they'll turn down the sound and listen to it on the radio.
You see them at Fenway Park with
Absolutely.
Their headphones on, and they're there live, and they're still listening to the radio.
And we have a long tradition. See, that's another great thing. Radio is theater of the imagination. Radio makes you feel like you are there. There have been radio stations since 1921 broadcasting live baseball and, you know, football games. People feel like, wow, they're taking me right to the event. And I think we're very fortunate to have those kinds of sportscasters here.
Let's take another call. Joan is calling from Cambridge. Hi, Joan. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? Wonderful program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I remember radio from the 40s. WEEI, Carl Moore, Beantown Varieties.
Oh, yes. He's in my book, by the way. I've got a picture of Carl. Yes.
I used to have his autograph, and I lost it. Breaks my heart. Anyway, Priscilla Fortescue.
Absolutely. Those women shows, those were one of the few things that women were allowed to do back in those days. Mildred Carlson, Priscilla Fortescue, Louise Morgan. They did the women's show, but they were just masterful at it.
Mum Parker.
Yes.
Yeah. I got interviewed when I was a small child on Priscilla Fortescue.
Did you really?
Yeah, got to sit on somebody's lap, I guess her producer's lap, and got interviewed, and I thought it was really special.
Indeed.
People got to visit radio stations.
Yes, and that's another thing. If you would visit a radio station, these announcers were stars to you. It was like,
yes.
Oh, my God, I met Louise Morgan.
Yes, you know? Yes.
I met Bob and Ray.
Line up with your autograph book.
Yes.
The other thing was watching sound effects. Absolutely blew my mind that they made horses' hoofs with two balls.
And they used to do fire with cellophane. They'd just crinkle it up. In fact, there was a guy...
I'm glad that Joan brought that up because, I mean, NPR, the style of production that I was sort of schooled in was going out and getting real sound.
Absolutely.
But I've got to say, the art of creating sound effects, I worry that we're losing that forever.
Well, there used to be a guy on WBZ named Gordon Swan who first got hired because he could bark like a dog. And he could do any animal noise you ever wanted him to do. The production directors back in those days had to create the sounds themselves. Yes, you could go out and get sound later. Don't forget, in the early days, they didn't have audio tape. So you go, literally, you can go out and get it. But there were people who made a living crying like babies, barking like dogs, whatever it took.
Well, Joan, thank you so much
for
the call.
One quick thing.
Very quickly, because we're going to have to wrap up in about 10 seconds.
Our junior high school in Boston had a radio club, and we produced a program.
Ooh. Terrific.
Bless you for doing it.
I needed to go to that school.
Yeah.
Donna Halper, we are out of time. I'm so sorry. We could have gone on forever. It was such a pleasure to have you in there,
I cannot thank you enough.
The book is Boston Radio, 1920 to 2010. Donna Halper is a media historian and assistant professor of communications at Lesley University. And you can go online at radioboston.org and see photos from the book, including a very young Donna Halper with the Canadian rock band Rush, whom she helped discover. That's a program for another day, Donna. Okay.
Thank you very much.
There's more Radio Boston after a break, but first, the only reason we've been able to keep WBUR a strong local voice is because of your support. Right now, we're hoping to raise enough money in our spring fundraiser so that we can eliminate our June fundraiser altogether. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. Here to tell you more about how you can help is All Things Considered host Sasha Pfeiffer and Only a Game producers Karen Given and Doug Tribou. Take it away, Sasha.